moving forward to rejoin the other townspeople in the mine.
"Sir Fred," one of the men called out and saluted. "We've gathered all the men with usable weapons to be the first line of defense. The few adventurers who joined Sir Orso are also here."
7 men and women gave Fred a salute. Fred noted the color of their adventure IDs.
"You're all rank F, are you not?" he confirmed.
"That's right, sir," the lead adventurer agreed.
Her hand clenched her sword tightly, her eyes narrow with pain.
"We were saved during the ambush by the actions of Fiora and the rest, but at the cost of their health. My fellows and I believed that they should have let us die, but at least we can use our lives for a noble end."
"I don't plan on dying here, and neither should you,"
Fred barked at them, startling the adventurers.
"Death is an ever-constant companion in this line of work, so why stress over this moment in your life? Whether you live or die today, always fight to stay alive in the hopes of a better tomorrow. Or have you not been learning from Master Mary's lessons?"
"We have, sir,"
the adventurers cried out in unison.
"Good," Fred smiled at them. "As long as we fight our best, we'll make sure they pay for every step they take."
"Oh, is that so?" a mocking voice echoed through the tunnels, freezing the defending warriors in place.
Fred turned around and saw the generals, led by Dickerson, walking toward them. The army and witches were not with them.
"How did you find us so quickly?" Fred asked quietly, readying his blade.
The eloquent general chuckled evilly, his body glowing in a dark, malevolent power like his fellows.
"You fools believe that we were made generals so easily? We've read every report about this dungeon and know its every move. Creating a false trail leading to the mine section the glob will be attacking soon? Very smart, but our enhanced powers allow us to smell your true path."
"Where's your army?"
Fred silently signaled for everyone to begin moving backwards.
"We need those warm bodies to forge a path to the dungeon core for us," the eloquent general revealed. "Even we would be hard-pressed to reach the core on our own. Better to pave a bridge with someone's corpse than your own, after all. Besides, me and my fellows figure massacring you feeble weaklings would serve as a good warm-up."
"Lads and ladies, raise up your swords," Fred commanded.
"Try not to die too quickly," Dickerson laughed, as they charged the defenders.
"Fred," Rowan cried, as he watched the battle begin. At his request, Doc had changed a portion of the wall into a crystal surface to project the scenes of the battle going on above them. Rowan, restrained by Doc's authority, could do nothing but cry and make Millie's unconscious form more comfortable. He gave Claire another pleading look, but she did not meet his gaze.
"Doc, please let me help them," Rowan pleaded again. "I can appear at the entrance of the mine and pretend I magicked my way through the army. I could say I figured out how to teleport. I could—"
"I'm sorry, Rowan, but nothing works to explain your presence without a connection to me," Doc finally answered. "The army and witches have set up a magic barrier at the entrance to my dungeon, preventing any reinforcements from entering. It's very thorough, and even I cannot stop it without corrupting the land outside my dungeon. I would if I could, but a group of injured adventurers and church people have appeared outside the barrier. I cannot allow you to endanger your fellows or myself."
"So there's nothing we can do."
Rowan slumped to the ground, watching as 2 miners were cut down and slaughtered by a laughing general.
"Your human feelings are what's causing you pain," Doc sighed from the ceiling. "And I can't fault you for them. If this were happening back when I first came to life, I too would interfere for the sake of doing the right thing. I did that once, and that was how Anodyne came into being. In my 1 year of experience, I found that what's right for someone may not be right for another. It's all about perspective."
"Then how can you justify just watching this massacre? Is that right?"
Anodyne suddenly spoke up, her eyes watching the defenders getting pressed back to the other townsfolk.
"It is right for us," Doc said after a moment.
"That's not righteousness. That is selfishness," Anodyne pointed out.
"And is that so wrong?" Doc muttered.
It is a leader's duty to protect his own first before helping outsiders.
But are they truly outsiders?
Anodyne continued, turning her gaze to look up at the ceiling.
In this one year of life for you, how many disasters and crises have you faced together with these people? How many of your slimes have come into being in thanks to the actions and objects made by these people? Can you truly say you feel nothing at the prospect of their deaths?
When Doc said nothing, Rowan and Claire looked up at the ceiling, a faint trace of hope on their faces.
I feel...
Sir Fred, we can't hold them!
An adventurer screamed, right before being sent flying into the mine wall by a punch. The generals roared in laughter as the man coughed up blood and slid down the wall like a piece of meat. Fred felt the rise of despair as he and the last of the defenders were forced back to the group of townspeople who were not prepared for combat. His sword arm trembled from the many blows he'd exchanged with the enemy, his brow wet with his sweat and blood.
"You earn your former reputation, Fred, former B-ranked adventurer," Dickerson mocked. "Too bad age has caught up to you, or maybe you would have put up more of an interesting fight. How about this? Surrender now, and we'll ask the mistresses to bless you as they have us. You'll be young and strong again, and your daughter will not be harmed."
"If I did that, my dear Mariah would never forgive me." Fred grinned savagely. "I may be old, but I'll take at least one of you with me."
"You can try,"
the eloquent general chuckled, and then punched his fist into Fred's stomach. Even with his skill, Fred couldn't stop the blow from sending him backwards onto his back, a shallow, fist-sized hole bleeding out of his stomach. Fred coughed, feeling the weakness spreading through his body. He opened his eyes weakly and could do naught but watch as the defenders were slowly worn down and knocked out of the fight. A few townspeople lifted Fred up into a comfortable position. Someone poured a vial into Fred's mouth, forcing a cool liquid into his body. Fred felt his strength returning, and his eyes focused on the face of Princess Shiva, who was crying profusely.
"I'm sorry," she whispered down to him. "All I can do is keep you alive just to watch us all die."
Fred smiled and wiped away her tears.
"Not now. Don't fear Princess. It's all right."
Out of the corner of his eye, Fred saw Hilda pick up a fallen sword and move to stand in front of the cowering townspeople.
"Ha ha ha," the generals laughed at her trembling figure.
Dickerson mimed wiping a tear from his eye.
"Little princess, put down that sword. That's a man's weapon."
"Men aren't the only ones who can fight," Hilda yelled. "My twin sister and mother were both strong warriors, and so am I."
"Really?"
The general grinned as another general slung his sword and cut Hilda's sword in half. Hilda's face broke down as she stared at the shattered sword in her hand. She fell to her knees and dropped the hilt.
"Be sure to greet your mother for us," the eloquent general gloated. "I would have loved to taste her flesh while she was still alive, but I'll settle with eating her corpse once we dig it out."
Drawing his sword, the traitor general swung down at Hilda's neck. A blue flash, and the man found his sword against a hardened slime tentacle. He looked up in shock to meet the fierce gaze of Anodyne.
"Hey, that's my sister," Anodyne growled.
Another tentacle burst forth from her chest and slammed into the man, sending him spinning into the air.
"For the crimes against the royal family, this town, and the dungeon,"
Anodyne announced, forming more tentacles.
"I sentence you all to death."
Chapter 27
"Sister?" Hilda whispered in shock. "Diana?"
The townsfolk behind her began murmuring in astonishment as well. Though most had never seen the former princess, her reputation had grown into a legend within the town, the warrior princess.
"It must be her," Fred said in surprise. "She looks just like her, but where else have I seen her?"
Anodyne didn't respond to the voices behind her, devoting all her attention to the enemies in front. There stood 10 demon-infused generals, 6 wielding swords of various lengths and sizes, and 4 with fists, glowing with demonic energy. In response, Anodyne sprouted slime tentacles to match each general, 4 hardened blunt tentacles and 6 hardened edge tentacles. The generals stared at her in shock. Dickerson was the first to recover, getting off the ground and growling at Anodyne.
"Oi, monster," he shouted. "What are you doing? What are you?"
"I am the wandering boss, Anodyne," she announced proudly. "And you are trespassing in this dungeon with the intent to steal the core."
"That's not what you said earlier," the general said with narrowed eyes. "You called Hilda your sister."
He re-examined Anodyne's face.
"And you look, are you really the former Princess Diana?"
"Ha ha, I'm right, aren't I?"
He laughed and slapped his knee.
"What's so funny?" Anodyne asked coldly.
The eloquent general grinned evilly.
"You were supposed to be the start of the plan, the broken princess fall into darkness. You would have been the perfect vessel for corruption, yet even though our plans were foiled, you still became a monster. Isn't it the greatest of ironies? You still lost your soul in the end."
Anodyne smirked.
"Unlike you worms, I still have my soul. I have conferred with the great dungeon consciousness and have convinced it that protecting the people of this town is preferable to having traitors like you stay here."
"So, the dungeon has taken a side."
The general frowned.
"Fine, we'll retreat for now. But next time..."
"You mistake yourselves."
Anodyne grinned wickedly as she began moving her tentacles.
"The dungeon doesn't appreciate demons being inside it. For all your intelligence and plans, you forgot to consider the fate of that demon prince who tried to conquer the dungeon."
As if to emphasize her words, the mine shook gently. In the shadows, around both the townsfolk and the generals, glistening blobs of slime appeared. They squirmed back and forth along an invisible barrier, frightening everyone in the mine.
"If you care about these townspeople, you'll let us go," Dickerson stammered, his sword wavering slightly at the sight of so many slimes.
"Why?"
Anodyne asked, slightly curious. The general pulled a symbol from his belt and pointed it at the slime woman.
"If we die here, the soldiers and witches under our power will immediately swarm this dungeon to avenge us. Also, our mistresses have a bit of our souls. If they feel us perish, then they will invade the town and slaughter everyone there. I'm sure the elderly and young there now will be unable to put up a fight."
Anodyne finally turned her head to look back at the people behind her. Inadvertently, her eyes locked onto her sister's. Hilda gave her a hopeful look, and Shiva began crying profusely.
"Big sister," Shiva wept.
Anodyne silently nodded before turning her head back to the generals. Unbeknownst to everyone there, she held a silent talk with Doc.
"Fine,"
Anodyne waved her hand, having the slimes back away.
"But the will of the dungeon desires death this day for daring to violate its trust. Let's have a fight to see which group pays in blood."
"What do you have in mind?" the general asked warily, pocketing the symbol.
"If you survive me, then you can leave,"
Anodyne screamed, and she surged forward in a flurry of tentacle attacks. The generals cried out in panic as they scrambled out of the way, desperately fending off her attacks with their weapons.
"Wait," Dickerson screamed. "Don't you care for them? You're putting them in danger."
"I am the avatar of the slime dungeon, Anodyne,"
the slime woman announced, an edged tentacle cutting the arm off a general.
"I honor the person I used to be by saving them, but my will is the will of the dungeon, and you must die."
Her 4 blunted tentacles joined together into a massive fist made of slime and slammed into 5 of the generals. The men were sent screaming into the air, landing in the group of slimes waiting in the darkness. Everyone in the dungeon paled at the gruesome sight as the traitorous men were devoured alive, their struggles doing naught but sinking them deeper into the mass.
Fine, then let's all die together, Dickerson roared in madness.
His eyes red, he whipped out a symbol from his uniform. Quicker than the eye could see, a small blurred figure swooped from the ceiling and stole the magic symbol. With a clatter, the metal icon landed in a crowd of different colored slime, who all began eating the offered item in turns.
Good job, Claire,
Anodyne mentally thanked.
No problem,
Claire responded from her hidden pixie tunnels.
Now, hurry up and finish this. Doc's starting to go hunger mad again from all the demon influence in the dungeon. No telling if he'll ignore the people or not once he snaps. Don't worry. These traitors to my father will all perish by my hand,
Anodyne grinned malevolently. Dickerson had lost all semblance of refinery as he realized his last chance had been stolen from his hand.
I refuse to die like this, he screamed, lunging forward with his sword.
Anodyne fused her right tentacles back into one and countered the general's sword attack, striking through the blade once, twice, three times, until Dickerson was left holding a stump of a sword. The general looked down soullessly.
You'll all die horribly, he screeched,
pointing at the townspeople.
Our mistresses will sate their thirst with your blood and use your bones as monsters to murder your children. No, don't kill me. I don't want to die, he begged
as Anodyne's tentacles slowly wrapped themselves around his arms and legs, stopping him from escaping. The other generals were knocked back into the slimes to suffer the same fate as their fellows.
Your true face appears in the face of death, Anodyne taunted,
pulling the man closer to her.
You never had the strength of spirit to fight, did you? I bet you lied your way up the ranks and sold yourself to whomever offered the greatest support. Now, face your fate, traitor, and be honored. Only one other man has ever felt my embrace as you will.
With a horrified scream, the general was pulled into Anodyne's body. The slime poured into his mouth, nose, and ears, cutting off his senses. Then the slime began to burn him, dissolving first his eyes and then his hair. Like Sir Corin before him, the traitor general was deprived of every sense except the ability to feel. And he was filled with pain, feeling every part of his body slowly melt off him and join the slime. Out of courtesy, Anodyne darkened the back of her body so her sisters would not see the process in action. The general, a faint layer of muscle on top of bone now, stretched out his arm for one final struggle toward freedom. This was the last conscious thing he ever did. Anodyne spat out the skeleton onto the floor.
Good job, Anodyne, Doc murmured in her head,
his mind sound and sane again.
Rowan's requested the skeleton, so I will have it delivered to him. I'll allow you a few minutes to talk as a reward.
Thank you, Doc,
Anodyne whispered, before turning around to face the townspeople. The slimes collected the skeleton and disappeared into the darkness once more.
Diana, tell me, is that really you?
Hilda's voice broke as she stumbled forward.
Sister?
Anodyne caught Hilda as she fell with a tentacle, bringing her twin into a soft, slimy hug.
It's me,
she finally answered. Hilda released her tears and dropped the sword she was still clenching, fully embracing her twin, her partner, her long-lost best friend. The two shared a hug that spoke more than any conversation could.
Big sis,
Shiva cried out as well, rushing forward to join the hug. Anodyne used her slime hand to pet her little sister's head, getting it a little gooey in the process. Shiva ignored the slimy feeling and embraced her sister harder.
Tell me, Grecian approached the family cautiously. Are you truly the former Princess Diana of Durin, or are you a monster impersonating her through the use of her memory?
He ignored the glares Hilda and Shiva shot at him. Anodyne shrugged two tentacles.
Really? That's too complicated an answer to give. However, I can say with assurance that I possess the soul of the Princess Diana
and recently acquired all of her memories. You could debate whether I am who I say I am forever, but I know my feelings. These are my sisters, and I do not wish them harm."
"That answer shall suffice," Grecian sighed. "But while I am grateful for your help, I fear you may have doomed us all."
"I doubt it," Anodyne chuckled. "That symbol the slime devoured? It was the core of whatever enchantment was used to control your army and witches. You'll find that the spell they were under has passed, and they will have regained their senses."
"It's not enough," Fred gasped out as he approached the group, supported by two surviving adventurers. "That controlling enchantment destroyed the demonbane enchantments on the army's armor and weapons. We're still defenseless against the coming horde, and if that traitor was right, the horde is on its way now."
"Indeed," Anodyne agreed. "Your town is in great danger now. However, I have conferred with the will of the dungeon, and it has agreed to assist you."
"The dungeon will bring the slimes to fight?" Grecian asked. Anodyne shook her head.
"The dungeon will not risk corrupting the land. However, it will provide two things."
With the snap of a tentacle, a horde of bright pink slimes appeared, each carrying a full set of armor and a weapon. A few held the fallen defenders and adventurers, though they appeared to be all alive.
"These are pink slimes, evolved versions of heal slimes," Anodyne explained. "They can heal you humans like heal slimes can heal slimes. They have been healing the men injured by the traitors and will heal all of you as well."
To illustrate, the carried defenders were laid on the ground and surrounded by slimes. Before the people's very eyes, blood returned to the body and wounds closed. One pink slime even crawled up to Fred. Fred sighed in relief as the pink magic of the slimes began repairing the damage inflicted on his body. The others watched in wonder as the hole in Fred's stomach closed up and disappeared.
"What of the weapons and armor?" Grecian pressed.
Anodyne smiled softly.
"These arms are from the undead dungeon, the tomb of the Forgotten King."
"Impossible," Fred gasped. "The dungeon collapsed into the ground and was sealed."
"For you, yes," Anodyne agreed. "However, that dungeon had been fighting the slime dungeon while fighting you humans. It created three tunnels that connected it to this dungeon. While the top two had collapsed, the bottom tunnel led into the depths of the destroyed dungeon, specifically the treasury room. These arms are from there, and all possess the Demonbane enchantment."
"Why do so much?" Fred finally asked, as he stood tall, his injuries all healed. "Surely the worth of this is greater than the town's. Why is your dungeon risking so much?"
"That is not for me to say," Anodyne denied him. "Just know that for this conflict, the dungeon is on your side, and so am I. I must go now."
"Don't leave," Hilda begged. "Stay with us. Please, don't go,"
Shiva also begged. Anodyne hugged her sisters deeply.
"I'm sorry," she apologized, "but my time as your sister ended a year ago. You must move on and become capable rulers for your people. My fate shall diverge from yours, but know that I still love you and our brother, now and forever."
"Wait, our brother," Hilda remembered. "Those traitors must have done something to him and the other generals. We need to rescue them."
"Good luck," Anodyne whispered, and she melted away into the ground.
"Wait, don't go!"
The two sisters tried to keep hold, but the slime slipped through their fingers. Fred and Grecian stopped them from digging into the ground and held them as they cried.
"Grab those weapons and armor," Fred ordered the townsfolk behind him. "We're taking them to the army. Then we're marching on the noble district."
The mine was filled with cheers. Chapter 28.
"Are you at peace?"
Claire asked as she flew next to Anodyne's moving form. The two were making their way through the pixie tunnels back down to the 26th floor.
"I believe so," Anodyne nodded resolutely. "While I regret being unable to see my parents one last time, I am blessed to have been able to give a proper goodbye to my family before parting for the last time.
Not everyone gets that chance, after all.
I agree, Claire sighed. My father was also lost before we could properly say goodbye. It's something so little, so insignificant, yet when it happens, it becomes the most important thing.
Indeed.
Anodyne cocked her slime head.
Forgive me, but do you hear shouting?
Doc, what's going on down there?
Claire asked, once she verified that she too could hear raised voices from the tunnels ahead.
I'm not entirely sure, Doc admitted. But I think Rowan may be getting murdered soon. That adventurer girl is waving those explosive daggers around pretty threateningly.
Are you going to stop her? Claire inquired.
Not really planning on it, no, Doc said nonchalantly. After all, Rowan will just come back to life, and we'll all continue with our lives.
But he'll be a lich,
Anodyne pronounced.
How are we supposed to explain Rowan dying and turning into a dungeon lich after we just saved everyone else?
A small boom shuddered through the dungeon tunnel.
Doc!
Claire and Anodyne screamed together.
All right, all right. I'll interfere. Let's see. Non-lethal attack. Non-lethal, non-lethal. Ah, here we go.
Claire and Anodyne popped out of the pixie tunnel, just in time to watch an infuriated Millie get covered in flower slimes. The helpless girl was dog-piled and surrounded by the soft, cushioning slimes and their pleasant, flower-scented bodies. Since Doc was using them non-lethally, Millie was safe, as the surface tension of the slime prevented any part from entering any of the monsters. Not that any part of the situation was making Millie happy.
"Let me go!"
she screamed, struggling to grab hold of her throwing knives while being buffered by slime.
"By the nine hells, you slimes had better release me, or I'm blowing you all to high heaven!"
"Millie, Millie, calm down,"
Anodyne urged as she reached the trap girl and began throwing slimes away.
"Hold on, I'm digging you out. Please, don't start throwing daggers."
"No promises," Millie vowed, but stopped reaching for her weapons.
With the help of Claire, the three girls worked together to free Millie from her odd predicament. Meanwhile, the twins lazed about on the thrown slimes, and Rowan hid himself behind one of the testing trap rooms.
"Okay," Millie growled out once she was free. "Now, someone is going to give me a very good explanation about why I was knocked out. And then I'm going to murder the bastards who killed my father.
Please, Millie, allow me to explain."
Claire flew over to land on the younger girl's head.
"To answer your first question, Doc somehow erected a large mana-draining field, depleting you of your magic, which resulted in you falling unconscious from mana sickness. Also, your father isn't dead."
"What? Are you speaking the truth?" Millie gasped, her fury reversing in an instant.
"She is," Doc declared happily. "See, I have this new idea for slime evolution, but needed to experiment with the magic that would cause it. So, I used it on you, and..."
"Not that," Millie interrupted Doc. "Did you really mean it when you said my father was alive?"
"She did," Rowan agreed, walking out from behind his cover toward Millie. "You were unconscious when it happened, but Anodyne successfully persuaded Doc to interfere and save both your father and everyone up there. Every miner, adventurer, baker, and so on who entered the mine survived."
Millie stared at Rowan, her mind not fully comprehending what he had just said to her. With a cry, she threw herself into Rowan's arms, sobbing her heart out as the relief for her father's survival spread through her body. Rowan struggled to hold the older and larger girl, his face showing the strain.
"Millie," he mumbled, "you're starting to crush me."
He didn't die," Millie wept.
"I saw him, Rowan. I saw him die in my dreams. The evil man punched through his stomach and splattered him all over the floor."
"Well, that almost happened,"
Rowan admitted mentally. He patted his friend on the back.
"He's fine, Millie. The pink slimes healed up his injuries."
"He got hurt,"
Millie screeched in Rowan's ear, causing him to groan in pain from the ringing in his ear.
"He's fine,"
Anodyne said, coming to Rowan's rescue by pulling the young woman into her embrace.
"Listen to me, Millie. I spoke to him myself. He led the other townsfolk out of the dungeon and met up with the army and church. That guildmaster of yours spoke with him and the other leaders, and they all ran into town to apprehend the other villains. Everything is all right for now.
Taking deep breaths, Millie slowly calmed down. She looked up into Anodyne's eyes and smiled sheepishly.
I'm sorry, she apologized.
Anodyne winked at her.
No harm done.
Sorry, Rowan, for attacking you, Millie turned and nodded.
Rowan waved her off.
Don't worry, I would have been fine. You don't scare me that much.
Oh? Millie raised an eyebrow.
Then who was hiding behind a wall a few seconds ago with barely an eye peeking out?
Whatever,
Rowan chuckled.
Don't fret over Rowan's health, Doc assured her from overhead. Even if you killed him, he'd be right back up.
Yeah, about that.
Millie narrowed her eyes.
Every time you all have broached that topic, something or someone interferes. No more secrets, no more games, and no more misdirection.
Rowan, are you immortal?
Rowan frowned and picked up a loose stone. Perhaps.
That's not good enough.
Millie crossed her arms at him. The other dungeon monsters backed away to give the two some space.
That's all I can tell you,
Rowan admitted.
I've never died before. It's not something I particularly look forward to doing.
Do you run towards death?
Fine, then. Do you age?
Millie pressed on, her eyes staring into Rowan's. She walked forward toward him. Rowan took a step backwards.
From what I can tell, in the small time that I've known you, my body has not aged significantly. It's why I haven't grown in the last 3 months, even though I just turned 11.
All right, Millie said, standing right in front of Rowan.
You didn't tell me this before, back when we spoke to Mr. Bubbles. Why didn't you then?
Mr. Bubbles? You mean your skull?
Rowan asked, confused.
I told you before, I don't remember sharing with you that I was a part of this dungeon, nor any other bit of that conversation.
Was what she said true then?
Millie mumbled under her breath.
Who's she?
Rowan asked, confused.
Millie, I'm not understanding where this conversation is going.
Millie grabbed Rowan's shoulders and knelt to look him in the eye.
Final question,
she almost whispered.
What do you think of me?
Rowan struggled out of Millie's grasp and stared at her.
He mumbled. Well, you're my good friend, and, you've taken care of me really well, like the big sister I never had. You're special, you know, and, I really like you and Fred and the tavern,
Millie sighed and turned around, hiding her face from Rowan.
I'm glad to hear that, she said evenly. I just wanted to make sure you'd be all right with my engagement.
What? Rowan asked in bewilderment.
Huh? Yeah, you remember Rolf, right? Yeah, his dad and my dad have been talking for a while now about marriage between our families. I mean, I've known Rolf since childhood, and he's always really liked me. I wanted to make sure you'd be all right with it, and it seems you are.
Once we get home, I'll have my dad and Mr. Grecian draw up a certificate at the church, and then Rolf and I...
No!
Rowan protested, taking a hold of Millie's arm.
You can't!
Can't I? Millie wrenched her arm out of Rowan's hand and marched towards Anodyne.
After all, I'm just your adopted sister.
Anodyne, can you take us back to the tavern before my father returns home?
Rowan clenched his teeth, frustrated beyond measure. He balled up his hands into fists at the thought of the arrogant and gloating Rolf handing Millie a ring. The image in his head changed abruptly, replacing Rolf's figure with his, startling him greatly.
Hurry up, Doc complained in Rowan's mind. Even I, the literal crystal head, can see where this is going. No one likes an indecisive person, and I'm getting bored.
But I could die at any time,
Rowan protested.
We'd never be able to be together again.
So? Doc asked. Do you know how many couples I've devoured in my 1 year of life? You adventurer types aren't well known for a long lifespan anyway. Best get a move on while you have the time to spend. Or, you know, I could try doing to her what Anodyne did. Not sure if it'll work, but it would be an interesting experiment.
Anything but that, Rowan refuted. But thanks.
No problem, Doc chuckled.
Rowan opened his eyes and yelled, I won't let you marry Rolf. Millie paused in front of Anodyne and turned around, raising an eyebrow at the younger boy. Oh, and how do you plan on stopping me? Rowan marched up to her, pulled her down, and kissed her deeply. Millie's eyes opened in surprise, then mellowed as she enjoyed the moment. Rowan released her and snorted.
I've lived over a century, and yet I've never met a girl like you.
Good. Millie flicked his forehead. Now that you've finally realized it, let's go home. Have to make preparations, after all.
You're planning on getting married now? Anodyne asked in surprise. Wow, things have really changed in the last year, haven't they?
Yeah, right, Millie scoffed. Have you seen the muscles on this weakling? I had to relax just so he could pull me into a kiss. I'll just have Father agree on our engagement until Rowan here turns 15, the legal marrying age. I'll go to the church for a few years for schooling, while Rowan will learn the tavern and adventurer trade. I want to see some real muscles on you at our wedding.
Wait, hold up, Rowan protested. This isn't how I imagined it would go. Don't I get a say in this?
Do you have the bridal price, a family to back you and help pay for the wedding, or a single coin to your name? Millie asked sarcastically.
No? Then be quiet and live with it.
Rowan slumped down and sighed. Blushing, Millie took a quick look around before whispering something into Rowan's ear. The 11-year-old jumped onto Anodyne and cried,
Let's go home, right now.
What did you say to him? Claire asked, depositing herself in Millie's shirt pocket.
Oh, you know, Millie blushed. Just a little promise after this whole mess is over.
Right, Claire giggled.
Oh, hey, you smell like flowers.
Oh, Rowan, Doc suddenly spoke up. Here, take these bones with you. I think you'll have a better use for them than I would.
In the tunnels that connected Doc to his openings into town, an odd cocoon shuddered in a hidden alcove. Within this cocoon, there was a small mound of severed heads, all in a state of fear. The cocoon shook, and a tentacle made of slime erupted from it, followed by another. They grabbed a decapitated head each and dragged them back into the cocoon, the slime hardening again. It began to squirm, as if something was being born within. It shuddered one last time and broke open like an egg. A slime oozed down out of the shell, colorless and weak. Suddenly, the slime turned purple. It exploded into action, devouring every remaining head in the alcove.
I know who I am, the slime growled, its body swelling up. Revenge is coming.
Within the dungeon town, everyone had gathered around the army headquarters. Cries of anger and denouncement filled the air as the townspeople cried for blood. Even the army released its bloodthirst, furious at being tricked into becoming mind-controlled puppets. Their new armor glistened dully under the noon light, as if coming to life after being buried for centuries. The leaders of this mob stood at the front. Mary, Grecian, Fred, a newly healed Orso, Hilda and Shiva, a recently recovered Gran, and a new person, Colonel Frost. Frost glowered at the makeshift tent base.
Our army is ready to storm the base, your majesties, he announced, bowing to the princesses. Our only wish now is to rescue the prince and bring those responsible for his betrayal to justice.
That's assuming the prince isn't involved, Orso spat on the ground.
No offense intended, your majesties.
Shiva glared angrily, but Hilda patted her head calmly and replied,
The brother I know would never perform such a deed, but our enemies have been known to take the minds of men and control them as you would a puppet. Whether the people within this tent are enemies or pawns,
We will soon know. Master Merry, Sir Orso, Hilda said suddenly. Neither my sister nor I have any experience with wartime matters or tactics. With our blessing, please command the troops.
Yes, your highnesses. The two leaders bowed.
My people have taken position along the walls, Gran announced, as he listened to a leaf-shaped magic tool. Their bows are prepared to counter any ambushes from the air.
Then it's time.
Merry took a deep breath.
All troops, storm the base!
With a war cry, Colonel Frost rushed into the base.
Are we to follow? Fred asked Merry.
Merry shook her head.
No, let the army do the job. I suspect what we seek is long gone anyway.
She said nothing more under Fred's questioning eye.
Sirs, a man came out a few minutes later. The entire base is empty. There is no one inside, but the men have found a hidden passage leading to the noble district.
Why would they flee to the weakest part of the town? Orso questioned. The palisade there holds no battlements, and the buildings are still mostly in disrepair.
Their real base must be there, Gran put forth. With minimal guards under the control of the crown, the enemy would have ample time to hide.
Then we go there, Merry said resolutely.
Before she could do anything, Gran received a sudden magical transmission.
An army of demons and fleshlings have been spotted on the horizon south of Tent City, he reported. It's massive and heading this way.
It's begun. Fred gripped the handle of his sword. Those traitorous generals said their mistresses would feel their deaths. It appears they have decided to end this waiting game.
Orso, Merry turned to her comrade. Please take the army, your knights and priests, and the elves to the Tent City battlements. You must hold them off for as long as possible.
I'll do that, but what do I tell the men?
Orso shook his head.
Our numbers are too few, and there is nowhere to retreat to. Our morale will be abysmal.
Merry bit her lips. She, too, knew that this endless army would be the death of them. There were no reinforcements coming, and no place to run.
Tell them that their families are here, she raised her voice. Tell them the children, wives, and husbands are here in town, counting on them to hold the enemy back for as long as possible. Make them pay for every step they take. Tell them that our only hope is to buy enough time for rescue to come. Tell them to pray for a miracle and to fight for a tomorrow yet to come.
Orso nodded and saluted the guildmaster.
Master Merry, Orso smiled. In the beginning, Father Jonas and I both had misgivings about you. However, I now see that you possess a most noble spirit, and it has been an honor to fight alongside you. Farewell.
With that, Orso took his temple knights into the tents to retrieve the army and head to the palisade.
Master Merry, Grecian spoke up next to her. While I agree with your decision, who will take the fight to the noble district? The townspeople?
No, Merry refuted his thought. You take everyone who cannot and should not fight to the elven quarter. Not only does it lie between Tent City and the noble district, if everything fails, you all can escape into the forest. Perhaps a few will make it in such a scenario.
By your wish, Master Merry, but then who will follow you? Grecian asked again.
Merry looked over at Fred, who smiled, and Gran, who nodded.
Don't worry, Master Grecian, Merry grinned. Before those pink slimes disappeared from existence, we put them to good use.
Behind her, adventurers began pouring forth from the streets, led by a freshly healed Fiora and company. The red-haired adventurer grinned and bowed to her master.
Master Merry, everyone is here,
she announced, and the adventurers raised up their weapons with a cry. Gannis and the three receptionists walked up to Merry.
Merry, I was unable to locate the children, Gannis reported, a worried look on his face. They are not in the town.
Then may the gods watch over them, wherever they are, Merry sighed.
For now, we march to the noble district.
Chapter 29
All right, we're home,
Billy announced, as she popped out of the water well in the tavern's training yard. Pulling herself out of the hole, she turned around and reached down to pull Rowan up. Anodyne slithered up behind them and took her adventurer form.
Looks like we're in the clear,
Millie muttered, as she walked over to the door and pressed her ear against it.
I don't hear anyone in the tavern.
My senses also inform me that no one is near,
Anodyne revealed.
In fact, I'm not feeling anyone near us, not even workers or children.
They're probably all dealing with the leaders of those traitors,
Rowan hypothesized.
I'd be surprised if anyone felt all right with that debacle in the dungeon.
Well, that's good for us, then, Millie decided. Now we can get to work and pretend we've been here the whole time. Want to give me a hand with the dishes, Rowan?
She grabbed his arm and pulled it to her.
I'd rather sweep.
Rowan blushed and retreated. Millie giggled as she watched him make a break for it.
You were so eager in the dungeon. Why run now? She teased him.
I'm a lot more confident there,
Rowan protested, as he took hold of a broom and dustpan.
Anyway, let's just clean up for now until Fred comes home.
Whatever you say, lover boy,
Millie giggled. Anodyne rolled her eyes, but couldn't help her chuckle as she followed the two teens into the main room. Millie went behind the counter and began to wipe down the mugs, while Rowan started sweeping the trash from the previous night's party. Anodyne took a seat and closed her eyes, resting. A sudden knocking on the door distracted the trio. Before Rowan could check who it was, a lock clicked, and the door swung open to reveal a nervous-looking Rolf and Danny. Rolf sighed in relief at the sight of Millie.
Millie, we've been looking everywhere for you. You too, Rowan.
No sarcasm or arrogant speech?
Rowan questioned with a raised eyebrow.
What, is the world ending or something?
In this case, you're right.
Rolf nodded in scared agreement.
I don't know if you are aware, but a group of traitorous generals mind-controlled the army and almost massacred everyone. They were saved by Princess Diana's ghost, who still haunts the dungeon where she died. Not only that, but a huge army of demons, fleshlings, and warlocks are on their way here.
What, an army?
Millie dropped the mug she was cleaning.
Oh no, does that mean that the attack is finally coming? Where is my father, Rolf?
The leadership have split up, Rolf told her. Knight Commander Orso is leading his Temple Knights, the men of the army, and the Elvish archers to the palisade to engage the enemy. Master Mary is leading the adventurers to the Noble District to fight the leaders of the traitors. Finally, my father is attempting to gather all the townsfolk and hide them in the Elvish Quarter. He sent me to Tent City to collect anyone left behind. Everyone was worried when we couldn't find you.
My father, Rolf,
Millie slammed her fist down on the counter.
Where is my father?
Rolf gulped at the large dent left in the solid wood counter.
Your father has joined Master Mary in her assault on the Noble District.
Millie closed her eyes and lowered her arms.
Rowan, she finally ordered, I'm going upstairs to grab everything valuable I can. See if you can find Father's old adventurer bag in the back. It should still have its storage enchantment in order. You and I are heading to the Noble District.
With that said, she ran to the stairs and up to the second floor. Before Rowan could move, Danny walked over to the back door and blocked it.
You can't go.
Rolf took a step back and blocked the front door.
You both need to come with me to the Elvish Quarter.
Anodyne opened her eyes and stood up. She fingered the realistic-looking sword hanging off her waist.
You're rather demanding for a boy, aren't you? My employer will go where she wishes.
Rolf gave Anodyne a measured look.
Every adventurer in the city is with Master Mary now. Why are you still here?
My business.
Anodyne faked yawning.
Now, since you've delivered the news, I think it's time for you to leave.
They are coming with me,
Rolf emphasized, his body beginning to give off a soft, golden glow.
It's too dangerous for them to be joining combat.
Says you,
Rowan retorted, his fists glowing black with dark magic.
Millie is going to join her father, and I am as well.
Can't you see I'm trying to save the both of you? Rolf grumbled in frustration. Look, this isn't some kid fight out there. This is war. Even I'm not confident in my abilities, and you lost to me just last night. Come on, let's just go to my father and...
And what? Millie interrupted from the stairs, her arms holding a small pile of valuables.
What do we do there? Hide, pray, wait?
I'm sorry, Rolf, but I'm not content waiting for fate to take its course with me. I'd rather face what's coming than place my fate into someone else's hands.
If you both won't come willingly, Rolf sighed, then I'll knock you both out and drag you to safety.
You really think you can take all three of us? Millie asked sarcastically, placing the valuables on the counter and taking out her throwing daggers.
By myself? No, Rolf admitted. But I do have some help here.
In a shocking move, Anodyne was sent flying across the room into the far wall. She was barely able to keep herself from splattering like a slime as she looked on in shock at her assailant. Danny let out a breath and retracted his fist, his entire body in a martial arts pose.
Danny isn't just my follower, Rolf explained as he took a step forward, his body covered in golden light that took the form of a knight's armor. He is also my butler in training, my best friend, and my bodyguard.
Rolf formed a lance of light and pointed it at Rowan and Millie.
Now, will you come peacefully?
Rowan and Millie exchanged glances before exploding into action. Rowan threw two balls of dark magic, and Millie charged forward with her throwing daggers.
I'll make this as painless as possible, Rolf promised.
Contrary to Mary's expectations, there were no guards in the noble district, nor any around the gate which was left open.
Master, Fiora murmured as the group entered the district. It would seem that the enemy has no desire to stop us from coming. That likely means...
That this is a trap, Mary finished, nodding her head.
I have the same feeling, Fiora. All we can do is be cautious and keep our eyes open to signs of trouble.
I can't hear the wind here, Fred noted. The sounds of nature have all been muted. That speaks of some kind of formation here.
Indeed, a loud voice echoed around them. However, we could only complete the silence enchantment. Sadly, any offensive or defensive parts could not be added in the allotted time.
Alfred, Hilda snarled. I knew you'd be somehow involved in this. Where is my brother?
Patience, princess, Alfred chuckled. Your brother is with me. Just follow the road to your mansion. It's about time we talk.
Seems like he has this planned out rather well, Gran noted as the voice disappeared. I didn't detect any fear or discomfort from him. He has been expecting us.
Then let's give him the old one, too.
Jonas smashed his fist into his palm.
That jerk is the one who sent us adventurers to our death in the first place.
And he's responsible for hurting our dear Fiora all those years ago, Nat continued. I'd say he's had this beating coming for a long time.
The adventurers all threw in their calls of support and readied their weapons.
That's our manor up ahead, Shiva pointed.
The younger princess had refused to leave with Grecian, opting instead to stay with Hilda to find their older brother.
And that's Alfred standing on the balcony, Gran observed with his elven eyes. He's just standing there, waiting.
Be ready for anything, Mary ordered, and follow me.
The group of adventurers marched up to the manor gates, stopping short of entering the grounds. Alfred stood upon the balcony overlooking the garden and smiled down at the adventurers.
Well, looks like everyone is here, he joked. The leader, the old friend with her new friends, the princesses, and all their adventurer friends. You know, you've all really messed with the plan.
Alfred, Hilda cried up at him. Why did you betray our brother? Why betray your people?
Why? Alfred mused. Well, why don't you ask Fiora? I betrayed her to move up from an orphan to advisor to the prince. Now I'm betraying the city to become leader of this country.
You wish to rule a destroyed nation? How is that an improvement?
Nat laughed sarcastically.
Not so, Alfred chuckled. See, I have a special tool at my disposal.
With a flourish of his hand, three figures appeared from behind him, Josh, Annabelle, and James.
Brother!
Shiva screamed as she saw her brother's face. The prince looked like a pale statue, his eyes glazed over as he walked stiffly into view.
Yes, your brother, Alfred acknowledged. He didn't wish to be a part of my plan, so a few adjustments had to be made. The plan was to slowly change as many citizens as possible into fleshlings or demon sacrifices, while sowing distrust between the classes. Then, after everyone unimportant died, my cohort of mind-controlled slaves, minions, and I would escape to another country. Using the fortune looted from every city, I, acting as liaison to the sickened prince, would lead an army of mercenaries to retake the country and crown the prince king. Of course, the Empire would allow me to win in return for secretly harboring their troops to launch a surprise attack. At that point, I'm afraid the prince would have outlived his usefulness, but at least he willed me to be the next king.
What a horribly evil plan, Mary snarled. Your actions have killed so many, and yet you desire more death. Where does your lust for power end?
Who knows? Alfred shrugged. See, that was the original plan. However, the Empire has not appreciated the delays and failures due to your actions. They've already lost a demon prince, 3 fleshling spawners, 10 talented generals, a flesh dragon, and, oh yes, that regiment of warlocks you adventurers slaughtered in order to escape the trap we set for you. As you can imagine, they aren't entirely happy with the progress here.
So then, what's the new plan? Fiora asked cautiously.
Mass slaughter, of course, Alfred beamed. We'll just have to hope that the prince is all we need to follow through on the rest of our plan. All of you, however...
Alfred's face finally turned malevolent as he smiled cruelly.
Have gotten in the way of my mistress's plans for the last time. It's time you all met my friends. Helen?
A fourth person appeared out of thin air next to Alfred. Witch Helen gazed soullessly down on the crowd below her.
Josh, Annabelle, join her, Alfred ordered.
At his command, the three jumped down from the second-story balcony. They landed on the path, denting the ground while showing no signs of pain. Alfred pulled out a scroll from his pocket and began to chant. Helen twitched as her eyes filled up with a golden light.
I'm the best, I'm the greatest, she twitched and mumbled. No one is better than me. You won't take my accomplishments from me. I'll kill you. I'll kill you all.
Annabelle's eyes glowed red as she too began twitching.
Alfred, my love, I'd do anything for you. I love you, I love you, I love you. I'll kill them all, drain their blood, and make an altar to you from their bones.
She laughed eerily.
All of you, die.
Josh squirmed and fell to the ground, his own eyes glowing green.
Damnation, why? I never wanted this. I just wanted to apologize to Fiora. Why does this have to happen to me? I wanted to be a hero. I wanted a good life. Why can't I have what you have? I'm so envious.
With a roar that sent shivers through every adventurer, the three humans caught fire as their bodies mutated into hulking monstrosities. Helen transformed into a golden angel with claws for hands and feet, before falling to the ground and gaining a lion's torso. Annabelle's legs fused into a spider's lower body, complete with separate spider head. Her human mouth erupted in fangs, and her hands transformed into claws. Josh's body elongated into a green lizard with 8 legs and 2 tails. His face morphed into a horrible fusion of human and reptile.
They've been sacrificed, Mary roared. Those are no longer humans. They are demon princes. Fight!
The adventurers rushed forward, and the battle began.
"It seems like everything has begun in town," Doc observed from his heart room.
Claire, who had decided to stay at the last moment, flew up to her pedestal